Let's jump into Hilchos Challah. So the maybe at the end we'll just talk about a game plan going forward, but we'll continue with Hilchos Challah tonight. The learning we do tonight is sponsored anonymously, but it's in honor of the Nagel family, Daniel and Annie in particular, for all of the work they do in the community in particular, or the work they do for the Kollel. So I echo that appreciation, mostly because I have to, because he's the president, and if he hears me say this and not echo it, it'll be weird, but also because I genuinely appreciate their work on behalf of us and the whole community. The Pisrei Tshuva tells us in Simen Shin Chav Vav and Yardei, and in the middle of Hilchos Challah, in the beginning of Hilchos Challah, that that when you do Hafrashas Challah, so you don't really have to verbalize anything. Technically speaking, a person could just look at an area of the dough and think in their heads, b'machshava, they could think it's something that's going to be separated as challah. They could think of it as a separate piece, and when they do that, that will work. That will register as Hafrashas Challah. Others assume that, no, if you're going to do Hafrashas Challah, you need a verbalization. You need to actually say, you know, Harezel Challah. This is actually a challah that I'm separating. And the poskim debate this. The Pisrei Tshuva quotes some of the opinions. The Chaz Nisha has a different opinion. So that is debated. It's not really relevant to us, that halacha, mostly, the verbalization or thinking in your head, because we take challah. We pick up challah. We separate it. So we're actually doing that. The verbalization is less important. I don't know what the cards, when you do Hafrashas Challah, you have the cards or the pamphlets that have the bracha and stuff like that, they probably say Harezo, right? It says Harezo Chal or something like that. I think some of them have that text. I'm not saying you have to say it. I'm just saying I think it might be included in there, but it's not necessary because you're already separating it. So that's something the poskim talk about in a different area. We're not going to spend time in it now because it's not really practical for any of us. But let's say in two cases. One is if you're a mashgiach or mashgicha in a bakery. So you need to have Hafrashas Challah on many products in many different places. So then you're not actually necessarily, you know, you're not actually touching the food. You're using some other entity. So then you might be thinking something or saying something. Additionally, imagine you're at someone's house and you know them to not be the type to take challah, or you know that their son has kulas and holds challah, you know, someone, and you don't trust their challah. So you want to take challah, but you're not going to sit there at the Shabbos table and, you know, cut off a piece and say, I'm just going to save this for burning later, because that would be embarrassing. So maybe you could think in your head, you know, this section is going to be challah, something along those lines. So that's when it does become relevant. So regardless of the verbalization of harezo challah, there is another verbalization. There is something else that we do say when we do Hafrashas Challah, which is obviously the bracha. The bracha of Hafrashas Challah. If you look in source number one, v'shah she'yafresh chali yevarech. Why do we make a bracha on Hafrashas Challah? Easy answer. It's a mitzvah. We make brachas and mitzvahs. Exactly. Is it daraisa? Is it derabanan? Okay, in the chutzlar is derabanan. We make brachas and derabanans also. We make brachas on Neris Chanukah. We make brachas on all derabanans. So that need a bracha. So you make a regular brachas and mitzvah. It is something, I don't know if we'll get to it. I kind of intended to, but I'm not sure we will. It is something to talk about whether Hafrashas Challah is really such a mitzvah. Because for some reason we didn't really, I don't think we spoke about this at length. We referenced how there may be one mitzvah or two mitzvahs of separating and giving, or separating and giving is one mitzvah. I don't think we spoke about the fact that, at least not at length, about is it actually a mitzvah that you have to mafresh challah, or no? If you want to eat this challah, you have to mafresh. It's a matir. It's a, right? We didn't really spend time on that, right? It's a license. It allows you to eat the challah, but it's not a mitzvah to do it. So that's a unique place that a challah sort of has, and it has ramifications halacha l'maisa. But loosely speaking, it is a mitzvah. B'shah she'afresh challah yivarech. What bracha do you make? Says the Shulchan Aruch. Asher k'deshanim b'mitzvah v'tzivanu. Right? Bracha Hashem l'kinim atlam. Asher k'deshanim b'mitzvah v'tzivanu. La'hafresh shruma. How many people here say la'hafresh truma? No. So the Rama here in the parentheses you have it adds o or la'hafresh challah. So this is kind of a unique line of the Rama in the sense that usually he debates or comments or agrees, but here he's giving you like an alternative. He's not saying you're wrong to say la'hafresh truma. He's saying, or alternatively, you could say la'hafresh challah. Either way, that's the one that you're more familiar with, la'hafresh challah? Yeah. Okay, la'hafresh challah. So, I'm sorry? And some people say minay isa, correct? Yes. So the Taz is going to bring that up, and maybe we'll get to it. That is a nusach that some people say as well. So again, the Shulchan Aruch says la'hafresh truma, and the Rama says la'hafresh challah. So in order to understand this, again, I don't know if you can call it machlokas, because the Rama's not saying you're wrong, Shulchan Aruch, and here's the right answer, but this two possibilities, these two opinions, as to the nusach, the text of the bracha in Hafrashas Challah, so we need to have a little bit of a background. So here, to be completely honest and upfront, what we're going to discuss now, we're like leaving Hilchos Challah for the next, 20 minutes or however long it takes us to get through this topic. We're going background from a general question about brachos in general and tefillah in general, and that will lead us back into Hilchos Challah. So we're starting with the question, why would you say Hafresh Challah? Why would you say Lahafresh Truma? What accounts for both those opinions? And if we talk enough about making brachos and tefillah in general, maybe we'll come back to understanding this machlokas in Hilchos Challah. So if you look in source number two.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
When you're mafresh it.
We don't make a bracha on burning, and that's a discussion exactly why not, but we don't make a bracha when you're burning. Once we're discussing, words and language, you look in source number two if you want to cheat, but we'll get there eventually, but that's sort of where we're heading. The concept of Lashon HaKodesh, language really in general, but Lashon HaKodesh in Hebrew in particular, it needs to be thought about and analyzed in sort of two different ways. The Gemara Nedarim has a few prakim, the sixth parak, the seventh parak, the eighth parak, in Nedarim, are all about dealing exclusively with this question. Some of it, again, you have in source number two, with the same basic question of basically as follows. How does the halacha determine a person's intent when they make a neder? A neder is a vow. So I say I vow, I don't mean this, but I'm saying I vow to not eat cooked foods. I vow not to eat, potato chips. So we take that seriously, right? A neder registers, and therefore it becomes an Isra Daraisa for me to partake of that particular food. Now, there are certain cases where a person says, I vow not to eat vegetables. I vow not to eat cooked foods. And we have to start to wonder, well, what was included? What's in the parameters of vegetables? Anything that's hadama? Anything that you refer to as a vegetable? Which one's the one that's funny? Tomato is a fruit?
Tomato.
Right, so if I said I vow not to have vegetables, do I include tomatoes? You and I colloquially refer to tomatoes as a vegetable, I think. Scientifically or whatever, it's a fruit. So what did I mean? Did I mean to include tomatoes? I vow not to have cooked food. What if it was fried? What if it was roasted? Is that considered cooked? So what you see in those questions, and Gemara teases this out in many scenarios, what you see in that question is basically we want to know, are there objective sort of parameters to language? Are there words that mean certain things objectively, concretely? Or do we always go based on what a person's intent probably meant to cover? Meaning when I said vegetables, does it exclude tomatoes because those are technically not vegetables? Or no, we know what you meant. We know what you meant. You meant vegetables. You meant things that people put in salad. And tomatoes is obviously one of those things. So that's a discussion across, like I said, many, many pages in the Gemara Nedarim, in the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th, in the 8th paragraph. The way you have in source number two on Memtes and Meseches Nedarim just summed up in a good sugya over there, the Gemara there basically gives us two options for how we're supposed to determine intent, and the way that the Gemara refers to this is either Lashon Torah or Lashon B'nai Adam. Meaning, you can look at language and say, hey, you're talking Hebrew, and the Torah talks Hebrew, so we should match up what you say with whatever it says in the Torah. So if the Torah has the word vegetables, and you said vegetables, whatever that means in the Torah, it means for you as well. Or no, we should go based on what the colloquial usage of those terms is. So even if the Torah refers to tomatoes as a fruit, but colloquially we refer to tomatoes as a vegetable, so we go by Lashon B'nai Adam, colloquial speech. What's the right, better word for that? Vernacular, I don't know. The common speech on the street, the way we refer to things. That's what the Gemara says the two possibilities are. When it comes to Nedarim, the Gemara says, what do you guys think? What makes more sense? If you're judging based on, if your person says, I'm not going to eat vegetables, I'm not going to eat cooked food. So should we look to the Torah for a source for what cooked means, for what vegetable means, or should we look at the people on the street, the way they talk? What do you think for Nedarim? So why would you think the Torah?
Because it's a
neder. It's a halacha. It's a mitzvah. It's a halacha. So you think the Torah. Yeah, why would you think people... I think you said people in the street, right?
So
that's the two sides. Exactly. So on the one hand, we're talking about halacha over here. This is a mitzvah d'araisa. If you're talking about a mitzvah d'araisa, look at the araisa, which means Torah, and try to find out what the lashon means. So that makes sense in oral areas of halacha. On the other hand, what we're trying to figure out here is what did you swear off? What did you say you don't want to partake of? So we should look at your intent, and your intent is not represented necessarily. We should be better about this. Our intent should be represented by the Torah, but we're not all the Malbim. We don't all talk with the biblical Hebrew. We talk with what's on the street, the way we talk in the street. So we should judge that for your intent, Lashon B'nai Adam. So the Gemara actually has, again, like I said, has a back and forth about this. But the Gemara does come to the conclusion that everyone should really agree in Nedarim that we follow Lashon B'nai Adam, that we follow the words on the street. Even though, again, you would have thought you should look at the Torah for proof. And you'll see some contradictions, that seeming contradictions to this in the Gemara. They're dealt with by the Achronim, but some seeming contradiction with the Gemara does bring proofs from the Torah for Lashon B'nai Adam. It's a funny thing where you find it blended, sort of. But Lemaisa, we do say, the Gemara says, the Pashtus, the simple understanding, is that we should follow the intent of people as they talk, as is common speech, in order to determine what a person meant by a neder. So that's the Gemara on Mem Tes in source number 2, as we sort of just summed it up. Now the Ran, you have it in source number 3, quotes a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi comes to a little bit of a different maskana about this, and it sort of starts to bring us back into our topic, although not directly yet, but almost. The Yerushalmi quotes Rabbi Yochanan, you can look inside, as saying that we follow Lashem Bnei Adam, and Rabbi Yoshia disagrees and says we follow the Lashem Torah. So the Yerushalmi offers a nafka mina between those two opinions. The Yerushalmi says, what if someone says, I swear I will not drink wine, I won't drink yayin on Chag? What's Chag? Literally, holiday. Which Yom Tif is usually referred to as Chag? Sukkis. Sukkis is referred to as Chag. So I will not drink wine on Chag. So, konam yayin she'eni shose b'chag, something like that. Any toim b'chag. Okay, so stam Chag, like you guys said, is Sukkis. Correct. Okay, so Sukkis is a bunch of days, and then what's at the end of Sukkis? Shmini Atzeres. So is Shmini Atzeres included in that person's nether? So the Yerushalmi says, well, it depends on this very machlokas. Because if you follow the Lashon Torah, you will never find in the Torah the Yontif of Shmini Atzeres being referred to as Chag. Sukkis is Chag, Chag HaSukkos Ta'as Elocha, but Shmini Atzeres is not referred to as a Chag. It's a regal, it's something else, but it's not a Chag. So if I said, Konam Yayin Eni Shosa Eni Toim B'Chag, it means I won't drink it on Sukkis, but Shmini Atzeres is a different story, according to the Torah. However, if we follow Lashon Bnei Adam, people say, where are you going to be for Sukkis? They mean first days, second days. Okay, you can break it up. I'm going to be first days here, second days there. I'm going to upset my in-laws the first days, upset my parents the second days. No one's happy in the end. But when we talk about the Yontif, we're saying first days of Sukkis, second days of Sukkis, we're referring to the whole thing as Chag. So if a person said, I'm not going to drink any wine on Chag, if we were looking at their intent, we'd probably think they mean through Shmini Atzeres. When we're planning our meals for Sukkis, we include first days and second days. It's a normal way to talk. So the Yerushalmi suggests this is a nafka mina between those two possibilities. Interesting. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch paskins on this. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodei, I don't think I put on the sheet here, sorry. But in Yerodei, Simon Reish Chaf, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Bavli, that we completely follow Lashem Bnei Adam. When it comes to Nadarim, we follow Lashem Bnei Adam, the way people talk. And if someone says, I am not going to drink wine on Chag, even though the Psukim never referred to Shmini Atzeres as Chag, we assume they are intending the entirety of Sukkis, including Shmini Atzeres, and therefore they'd be usher to have wine throughout the entire Yom Tif, including the second days. Good so far? Okay. Now, the Maharal, you know, we think of the Maharal often quoted in, you know, in the realm of philosophy, in the realm of Machshava, in the realm of Drush. The Maharal was a posek in his time. He was he had a few different stints in terms of his job. He wasn't really the Rav of Prague until the end of his life, but when I think he lived in Prague like three different times. So the third time in the last years of his life, he was the Rav of the town, but he was always a major Talmud Chacham, but he wasn't always a practicing rabbi of the town. But he was a posek. If you learn certain areas of halacha, you'll find him quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. So here the Taz quotes the Maharal. The Maharal suggests that this halacha has tremendous implications. This halacha about the, you know, Chag referring to the entirety of Sukkis, including Shmini Atzeres, has tremendous implications outside the realm of Nadarim as well. This is where we start getting towards our topic. It's a very fascinating back and forth. So we see in this halacha that the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara, are referring to Chag as a term that's relevant by Shmini Atzeres, not only to Sukkis, but to the whole entire span of time, including Shmini Atzeres. So that we see from the halacha over here. Now, since that's true, the Maharal says, therefore it makes sense that when we're davening on Shmini Atzeres in Shmoneh Esrei, we should reasonably be able to refer to Shmini Atzeres as a Chag. So when we say, you know, Yalav Yavo, that tefillah in Shmoneh Esrei, and you always have different siddurim with different neschaos over here, Shmini Atzeres, this is where it comes from. So we should be able to say, Es Yom Chag Shmini Atzeres, how's that? We should be able to say those words, Es Yom Chag Shmini Atzeres, how's that? Because Shmini Atzeres is also Chag, it's also Yom Tov. You're going to specify Shmini Atzeres because you want to be specific in your tefillah, but the word Chag can be used in the context of Shmini Atzeres. That's like the Shulchan Aruch that we quoted before. The Ramah disagrees with that. The Ramah assumes that we don't say Chag about Shmini Atzeres. I don't have the sitter in front of me, but how do Ashkenazim say it? Es Yom Shmini Atzeres HaChag HaZeh? Shmini Chag HaZeh. What is it? Shmini Chag HaZeh Zeh, right? You separate the Chag from the Shmini. So I think maybe Nosachari is the way I just said it. It's Yom Shmini Atzeres HaChag HaZeh, something like that. So there's different ways of saying it. This is where it really comes from, because we're questioning whether the word Chag can actually refer to Shmini Atzeres. Now, while you certainly logically can understand what Maharal is saying, we have to stop and note that he's making a major jump. He's making a major assumption. Because we say by Nidarim, we should follow Lashem B'nai Adam. And when a person says, I'm not going to drink wine on Chag, it refers to Shmini Atzeres as well. Therefore, we should also say that about Tefillah. Does that make sense? Again, you could say yes, it's not a trick question. It can make sense. But I'm just pointing out that's a jump, correct? Meaning Nidarim and Tefillah are two separate areas of Halacha. By Nidarim, we gave a logic. We gave a Svara. The Svara was that when a person is talking, I don't want to do this, I plan not to do that, we should judge the language based on their normal speak, their normal way of talking. So we should go by Lashem Bnei Adam. They refer to Shmini Atzeres as Chag, so Chag refers to Shmini Atzeres when they make a neder. Does that obviously follow that should be true by Tefillah as well? It doesn't obviously follow. Can you give a logic that it should follow? Can you defend the Maharal? So I don't know if he intended this, but one way perhaps to defend the Maharal is that, yeah, Tefillah is all about Kavana. It's about talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's about relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and meaning it when you're talking to him. So when a person is trying to compose a tefillah and say something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it should be said in such a way that he understands what he's saying, that it's meaningful to the person who's speaking, and we should judge it based on colloquial speech. Now, okay, could be a lot of the text of the tefillah is based on Nevi'im, is based on the Tehillim, is based on Chumash. Fine, there will be a lot of Lashon Torah in there, but if we want a term and we want to define it, we would define it based on how you understand it, how a normal person understands it, Lashon B'nei Adam. That seems to be the jump the Maharal is making. The truth is the Netziv, you have in source number 4, the Netziv, this is a source that I initially learned from my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, and I've heard it many times since then from him, but it's an important Netziv to look up inside. In source number 4, in Hanuk Shela, the Netziv writes, and here in the bold you see it, Habara b'tfila u'brachos dehochen achar lashem b'nei Adam, b'ez alf is b'nei Adam. So the Netziv has an arichos, he has a lengthy piece about this, but he proves this, and Paskin is like this assumption of the Maharal, that we should follow the lashon of b'nei Adam, and therefore, you know, hachag is relevant by Shmini Atzeres as well, even in tfila. He gives another nafkamina. I believe it's here, yeah, at the last three lines of this piece that I typed for you from the Hamek Shela, the Netziv writes that on Yontif, we end the brachas in tefillah as Mekadesh Yisrael v'azmanim. On Shabbos, we say Mekadesh HaShabbos. Okay, so let's say a person slipped up, they messed up, they said on Yontif, accidentally said Mekadesh HaShabbos, instead of saying Mekadesh Yisrael v'azmanim. So, generally speaking, you got to get the Nusach HaTefillah right, and here it's totally off. It's not Shabbos, it's Yontif. But you said Shabbos instead of Yontif, so what do you do? So, I have an idea. If you read the Pesukim in the Torah, sometimes Yontif is referred to as Shabbos. Mimachras HaShabbos, the Torah says in Parshas Emor, you start counting Sviras Omer, Mimachras HaShabbos. That doesn't mean on Sunday. For the Tzedukim, that means Sunday. For the Jewish people who follow the Torah Shel Peh, the Torah there refers to Pesach as Shabbos, because Yontif is a type of Shabbos. It happens in other places as well. Yontif is a type of Shabbos. So if that's the case, if I said, you know, Mekadesh HaShabbos on Yontif, I got it wrong, technically that's true, but the word Shabbos does also mean Yomtif in Lashon Torah. Says in the Netziv, it's not good enough. Why? The Torah refers to Yomtif as Shabbos, but says in the Netziv, what do you need for a tefillah? Lashon Bnei Adam. You need to talk the way you normally talk. No one says good Shabbos on Yontif. No one says good Shabbos. It's not Shabbos, it's Yontif. We don't talk that way. So it wouldn't work for tefillah because the Netziv, like the Maharal, is assuming that tefillah and brachos should always be determined by Lashon Bnei Adam. And therefore, again, like we said before, you can refer to Shmini Atzeres as Chag, but you wouldn't be able to refer to Yontif as Shabbos. Okay. In source number 5, you have the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim, Tafresh Samaches, again, Hilchos Sukkis. Here you have the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, V'titin lanu es yom shmini chag ha'atzeres hazeh, that's the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah that I was struggling to quote before, Aba anu noagim she'inom chag b'shmini, de'lo matzinu b'shum makum shenker chag, ela omrim yom shmini atzeres. Yom shmini atzeres. Okay. So that's the machlokas, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch is consistent with the Maharal, with the Netziv, but the Ramah is arguing on this. The Ramah says that we can't possibly refer to Shmini Atzeres as Chag because, hey, it doesn't appear in the Torah that way as referred to as a Chag. The Ramah does have a point. You know, a cursory look at the Pesukim in Parshas Emor yields that Enrei, yields the Enfintus, yields that we don't have in the Parshas Amodim any reference to Shmini Atzeres as Chag. But there are two questions to consider. First of all, who cares? Who cares that it's not referred to like that by the Torah? Why shouldn't we follow Hashem Adam? That's what the Maharal and the Netziv told us. Second of all, the Vilna Gaon points out in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch here, not in source number 6, that's a different Vilna Gaon, we'll come back to Bli Neder Mir Tashem, but the Vilna Gaon in his commentary in Hilchos Sukkis points out that the Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah Daf Mem Ches does refer to Shmini Atzeres as a Chag. Kol Shmona, all 8 days of the Chag, Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, the Mishnah refers to also in Gemara in Arachin, also in Tainus refers to Shmir Teres as Chag. So you find the Chazal in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, do refer to Shmir Teres as Chag. So you're telling me that we never call in the Torah Yomtif of Shmir Teres a Chag. We do. The Mishnah and the Gemara do it. So again, who cares that it's not in Torah? And it is. It's in the Mishnah and the Gemara, correct? So what's the Ramah's argument back? What's his pushback? So the truth is that the Maharal and the Nitziv were making an assumption that not everyone agrees to. The Taz is the one who quoted the Maharal. The Taz quotes that Maharal and then he rejects it. And he says that when it comes to Nedarim, we follow Lashem B'nei Adam, but that's no proof whatsoever that you jump from Nedarim to Hilchos Tefillah. We tried to defend it before by saying it's about Kavana, but he says there's no such proof. Who says that you go from Nedarim all the way to Lashon B'nei Adam applying to Tefillah? Who says such a thing? Rather, in Tefillah, we should follow Lashon Torah. Now, I'm not saying I have a proof, the same way I had a logic for, I'm happy to hear if you do, the same way I had a logic for, you know, the Maharal, that you should use Lashon B'nei Adam for Tefillah, I'm not saying I have a logic for Tefillah, but it's almost, in some sense, a little more intuitive, that the Tefillah should come from the Torah, that the Tefillah should come from the Lashon of the Torah, the Nevi'im Niksuvim. So much of Tefillah is built on Tilim, on Nevi'im Niksuvim, on the Chumash. So it makes sense that the language should really parallel, mimic, utilize the Lashon of the Torah. The fact is that the Sefer, you've all heard of the Abu Draham, who wrote on the Siddur, so he doesn't just say this about Shmini Atzeres. He says it as a general klal. The whole Sefer Abu Draham, that sounds like a Gaivadik thing to say, and it is a Gaivadik thing to say, because I haven't actually learned the whole Sefer of the Abu Draham, so just pretending I have. But now, just to make it clear, I'm talking in Lashon of my Rebbe, who probably did read the entire Abu Draham. So, to quote, Rav Shechter points out that the entire Sefer Abu Draham, and I'm trusting on this, and the whole Zohar for that matter, the entire Sefer Abu Draham is really built on this premise, that he's trying to figure out where you find in the Psukim the different words in Tefillah are matched up from the Torah, the Nevi'im, and the Ksuvim. He spends the majority of his time in the Sefer trying to show you, this Mila, this word that we use in a certain tefillah comes from this pasuk in Tanakh. That's like what he's always trying to do, matching up, because he has a klal that he's proving that the phrases in tefillah are based off of psukim mifurashim, are based off of explicit psukim or similar terms to things which appear in psukim. Because again, he assumes this is the yesod musad. He assumes this is the basis of all tefillah that is based on Torah and Nevi'im and Ksuvim. There's also what to add over here, in the sense that we know the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah are the ones who are masaking Tefillah, Shmoneh Esrei, they wrote it. And the Gemara makes a point of mentioning that it was the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the great rabbis of their generation, who were masaking Tefillah. U'beinehem kam Nevi'im. Among them were a number of Nevi'im, of prophets. There's what to talk about in terms of why that was necessary. Interesting things to discuss there. But one thing that comes out is that apparently Nevi'im were part of the process of creating the Tefillah. So it does make sense that the Lashon of Navi, the Lashon of the Torah, should be included in that tefillah formation. That's a separate thing we don't have time to get into. The Nitziv talks about at length is whether when we say Lashon Torah, where does Lashon Torah end? Meaning Torah is from Hashem. Nevi'im is Hashem's word through the Navi. Ksuvim is really the Navi's words representing what Hashem's Ruach HaKodesh gave them. So at what point is it switching from Lashon Torah to Lashon B'nai Adam? That's a very fascinating discussion. Tilim would be in Ksuvim. So it would come out very interesting that maybe we're not even talking about the right terms over here. But we don't have time to get into every detail right now. But you know, generally speaking, Lashon Torah should be utilized for the Tefillah, says the Abu Draham. The Kesef Mishnah has a very interesting suggestion. This is a famous, not from the Kesef Mishnah, from elsewhere. He claims that perhaps, if one makes a mezonos, a bremiyane mezonos, on any food on the, what's it called? Food pyramid, right? Not food chain, food pyramid. So if he makes a bracha of bremiyane mezonos on any food in the food pyramid, even if that bracha, that food really deserved a shahakal, or a brei pri eitz, or a brei pri adama, but the mezonos will cover it. He'll be yotzei his brachos, except for, I think he says, water and salt, maim and melach. What's that about? So if you look, the Be'er Lach and Hilchos Brachos quote this same klal from the Chai Adam. The Chai Adam in Klal Nun Ches says this lahalacha. He says this practically speaking, that if a person has a safek about what bracha to make, or if a person accidentally made a mezonos, he'd be covered. He'd be taking care of his food, even though it was really deserving of a shahakal. That's what Rav Shechter always says, that in his house he taught this Chai Adam. So, you know, when you're a kid and you don't know the bracha, you say, oh, shahakal patas everything. And my parents told me shahakal patas. So his kids always said, oh, mezonos patas everything. So they're always the weird people, you know, making mezonos and all the random foods. So the Chai Adam says in the footnote there, in the Nishmas Adam, he has a complicated, long discussion over there, in which he basically explains that the word mazon means in the Torah? sustenance. It just means sustenance. It means things which sustain us. Other than water and salt, which are not sustaining, they just water actually is, but I know, but water is not sustaining, and it doesn't give you nutrients. It's just hydration. Salt is neither. So other than water and salt, all food sustains you. All food is sustenance, has nutrients, protein, whatever, you know, is made up of. So that word mazon can really refer to any food. It can refer to any food. So the Nishmas Adam, that's the footnotes of the Chai Adam, he says that brachos always follow the lashon of the Torah, the lashon of the psukim. And the psukim tell us the word mazon does mean sustenance. So if a person says borei minei mazonos, he's referring to the Torah's word mazonos. The Torah's word mazonos covers all things that are sustaining us, and therefore the bracha borei minei mazonos should be this overarching, you know, klaliistic, general bracha that can catch all, that can kind of cover things accidentally, not on purpose. You wouldn't want to do this. It would be b'dieved. If you forgot and you made the wrong bracha, or if you were very stuck and you didn't know a bracha to make, let's say, so a mazonos should cover everything. But again, this Chai Adam, regardless of what the halacha is, you know, whether we follow the Chai Adam, this Chai Adam is representing exactly what we just spoke about, based on the Kesef Mishnah, that the brachos and the tefillah should always follow the lashon of the Torah. That whatever the words in the Torah are, you should make your brachos and your tefillah mimicking that phraseology that you find in the Torah. Like the Abu Dram, like we said until now. Good? The other case where this comes up, I think I spoke about this in the Kollel last year. Yeah, last year, is the bracha in the morning that we say of Shalo Asani Goy. Shalo Asani Goy. So you'll look into this. There's a Ksava Kabbalah about this, or Shechter writes about this also. But the bracha Shalo Asani Goy is kind of a perplexing bracha, because the word Goy, what does the word Goy mean? Non-Jew. Well, we use it as non-Jew, colloquially, but that's sort of like a Yiddishism. Really, what does a Goy mean? Nation. Goy Kadosh means a nation, right? So if you look through Tanakh, the word Goy really means the nation. And it could even mean the Jewish nation. In many cases, it does mean the Jewish nation. There are like one or two possible exceptions, not definite exceptions. That's, I think, why we spoke about it the last year in the Kollel. Just blanking on which parsha it is now. Somewhere where Hagoy Gam Tzadik Tarug and Abimelech is saying that, one of the parshas of Avraham Avinu. So there, it's questionable. Unklos, you have to look at the different mafarshim there. Does Goy mean the nation, or does Goy mean actually one individual non-Jew? It's not clear. The Mepharshim struggle with this. But generally speaking, the word Goy refers to entire nations. So to say Shalo Asani Goy makes sense. If you talk Lashon B'nai Adam, I'm not a Goy. Yeah, we do talk like that. That is the way we talk. But if you're talking Lashon Torah, Shalo Asani Goy, made me a Goy. I mean, I'm part of a big Goy. I'm part of the Goy Kadosh of Klal Yisrael. So because of that, the Rav was not sure about the text of that bracha. And I think that the Rav himself actually didn't say Shalo Asani Goy. He said Shalo Asani Nachri, which has its own issues to say that word, because Nachri doesn't necessarily mean non-Jew. It could just mean stranger. So that's also potentially problematic. I think the Chafetz Chaim might have had a nusach, like I think Rav Sternbach has a tshuva about this, that he writes that he had a nusach, Shalos Ani Akum, that you didn't make me an Ovid Avodzar, an idolater, which is also good, but it also has problems, because, what about Yishmaelim, Arabs who aren't technically speaking idolaters? You're happy that you weren't an idolater, but you would be just as happy if you were an Arab? Like, it's you have to figure out, what nusach is the best one. You know, some people will try to cover both. They say Shalos Ani Nachri Goy. They say both to try to cover all the bases. But this is another case where basically if you assume that we go by colloquial speak, so then Goy makes perfect sense. But if you assume we need to follow and parallel the Lashon Torah, then you have to start to wonder whether Goy is the right word to express that, the idea that we're trying to express in that bracha. A very fascinating application. Okay. Based on all of this that we've just gotten into, if you look in source number 6, Rav Shechter points out, and I've heard it from him many times, that when one is mafresh shechala, so you have to make a berachas mitzvah. Brachos are supposed to mimic, let's say, Lashon Torah, the way we've been describing it until now. Oh. So says the Shulchan Aruch, you should say the bracha asher kedeshanu b'mesos avitzvan lahafresh truma. Lahafresh truma. And the Ramah says, did I get it right? Yeah. Alternatively, you can say lahafresh chala. Now, just to be clear for a second, we're not implying anything that's going to be consistent. Meaning, I'm not saying the Shulchan Aruch lines up with the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah lines up with the Ramah. That's actually going to come out the wrong way. But what the Ramah adds alternatively is lahafresh chala. It could be that they're arguing about this very idea in this context, where basically the Shulchan Aruch is saying lahafresh truma. Where does the word truma come from? So the answer is the pasuk tells us reishis ariso sechem chala tarimu truma. You should lift up truma. You should take truma from the chala. So in the Torah, the way we refer to hafreshes chala is you take truma. So if I'm making a bracha, I should mimic the lashon of the Torah and say lahafresh truma. That's what makes the most. That's what makes the most sense. If you look in the Ber Agra, the Vilna Gaon, here in the source number 6, truma. That's the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch. Kemosha Kasav in the Pasuk, Tarimu Truma. Uvaloshna Mikra Chala Nikra Ha Isa. Kemosha Kasav Chalos Belulos. When the Torah says the word Chala, Chalos Belulos, it means the entire batch of dough. Okay, we refer to Chala by us means braided bread. But that's not obviously what it means in the Torah. What it means in the Chumash is the entirety of the batch of dough. In Mishnah, it means the Chala is the piece that you separated. But in the Torah, the Chala is not the piece you separated. The Chala is the entire batch. So Chala is what you're taking from. Truma is what you're actually taking. Lahafresh Truma should be the bracha. And Baharba Yotze, Aval B'Lashana, Mishnah Nikra Chala B'chol Makom, fine. Umikol Makom Nachon Levarech B'Lashon Mikra. Says the Golden Gaon, like we said until now, from not the Maharal, not the Nesiv, but everything we said after that, the Rav, or the Avudran, that Kasev Mishnah, the Chai Adam, that the best way to make a bracha always is to mimic the Lashon of the Torah. Here, the Lashon of the Torah is Reish Ariso Sechem Chala, Tarimu Truma. You should take Truma from the Chala, so therefore it makes sense to make the bracha of Lahafrish Truma, according to the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama is apparently pushing back and saying, no, Chala is equally legitimate. Either because he disagrees with what Chala means in the Torah, that's a little bit hard to say. Or because he thinks that we can make brachos, not preferably, because he says, oh, alternatively, but equally, we can make a bracha that's mimicking the Lashon of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is also good enough, Lashon Bnei Adam is also good enough for tefillah and for brachos. That would not be consistent in the Ramah, but it's an idea that he's throwing out here in this area. If you read the Pasuk now with the Vilna Gaon, so the Pasuk really reads very beautifully, and the trups support this as well. Reishis arisoseichem chala. From the first of your batters, which you've made into a dough. Reishis arisoseichem, from the first of your batters, chala, which have been turned into a dough. Then this is like attached to the next term. Tarimu truma, you should separate from that chala your portion of truma. Meaning, the truma is what you're separating from the chala, which is the entirety of the batch. And again, if you look at the trup, there's sort of a break between these two spaces to make it connected in that way. So it actually works out well when you read it inside. We mentioned before that I guess a lot of people have this text as well. The Taz does record a minhag to say, he says two possibilities. One is lahafrish truma chala, meaning satisfy both opinions by saying both, or chala truma, I don't know which order he says it in. The other possibility he suggests, which we've heard of, is lahafrish chala min ha'isa, which would clarify the issue that we're touching on, right? Meaning, lahafrish chala, we're referring to the thing that we're separating, is chala min ha'isa, from the entirety of the dough. So it's almost like we're apologizing for the fact that chala doesn't really mean that by building in the other term. The Taz rejects it because he doesn't think you need to mention where it's coming from, the chala, but he does have such a minhag. But again, we have lahafrish chala min ha'isa, lahafrish truma min ha'isa, lahafrish chala without min ha'isa. So you have at least four different possibilities, permutations of how to make the bracha, but now at least we see a little bit of the depth behind that machlok is where does it really come from? So again, I think the prevalent minhag is definitely lahafrish chala. Is it min ha'isa by everyone? Mm-hmm. Everyone here, I mean. Lahafrish chala. Chala or chala min ha'isa?
I rarely think chala if I do that. I don't think I ever say
min ha'isa. Right, but you say the word chala. Right, that much we all agree on. I think my wife does it, lahafrish truma. But I think that's because Rav Schachter, based in this Vilna Gaon, says that that's what you're supposed to do. And she makes me listen to Rav Schachter, so she's consistent. So that's one minhag, one way to say it. But again, now you see the depth behind it. The thing that we didn't get to, but we're not going to go over time, is another discussion, which is how are you supposed to be sort of positioned when you make the bracha and challah? I don't know how often it comes up, but if you're sitting down when you're mafresh challah versus standing up, are you letting the bracha sitting down? So it seems in the Mishnah, in Maseches Challah, that a person is allowed to make a bracha on Hafresh Challah sitting down. The problem is that we assume, this is a big question why we assume this, and it's a debate where the source is from, but we assume that from some phantom Yerushalmi, that when a person makes Berachas HaMitzvah, they're supposed to be standing up. We make the stand up for the bracha of Sfiras HaOmer. We stand up for Berachas HaMitzvah in general. So why would Challah be any different? So there are two possibilities. One, the Magen Avraham suggests in Simchas Ches and Arachayim. The Magen Avraham suggests that Challah is different because what we mentioned way back in the beginning of the shir, that Hafrashas Challah is not, per se, it's not exactly a mitzvah. It's more a matir. It's just allowing you to eat the Challah. So it's a little bit less of a chashuv. It's not as significant of a berachas mitzvah. Maybe you're allowed to sit for Hafrashas Challah and the bracha on Hafrashas Challah, but not for other berachas mitzvah. That's one suggestion. The other suggestion, the issue is Yaakov quotes, the Pesach Teshuva quotes from the issue is Yaakov, is that the Mishnah never meant that you're allowed to sit when you make the Brachah Mechala. The Mishnah meant in a very specific scenario, someone had to sit. They were stuck. They had to sit on the ground. They could still, it's not ma'akev. It doesn't impede. You're still allowed to make the Brachah. But ideally, a person should absolutely stand when they make a Brachah on Havrashas Chala. So we do assume la'alach is best. It's best to be standing. But there's a little bit of a debate whether that's, how lichatchil that is, how preferable or how important it is to be standing when you're making the Brachah, just like by all other birchos ha-mitzvah. Okay, we'll stop here with the shiur for tonight.